2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, August 10th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. And Chet, the Phils are out west, and they're filtering through some more young players as they go. The Eagles open up against the Tampa Bay Bucks tomorrow night at Lincoln Financial Field. Surrounded by news of Lane Johnson's possible, is it on, is it off, 10-game suspension. And we'll cover it all tonight with the Philadelphia Inquirer award-winning journalist Mike Sielski. And in the second half of our show, we will unveil our four finalists for our 2016 Hall of Fame broadcasters class.
Yeah, maybe even some Olympics talk as well. So lots to cover in an hour. Let's get it going.
All right. Well, before we get started, we want to let our listeners know that we will have our Carl Scarza Collectibles trivia question. We will be giving away a signed 8x10 color photo of the Flyers, Sean Podine and Dave Poulin, to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. We'll be asking that question a little earlier tonight than we normally do, so it'll be about 7:24 tonight. So write this number down so you're ready. Our shopforkisses.org phone line is 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. And with that business taken care of, let's welcome tonight's guest making a return visit to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, Mike Sielski. Welcome back, Mike.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, Mike, it's Chet. We want to talk to you about your weekend column in just a moment, but we need to get your take right here at the top on the Lane Johnson mess. He's saying not so fast regarding a second PED violation, but if he is suspended for 10 games, that's going to leave an already thin offensive line in shambles, is it not?
Oh, it absolutely is. I would recommend you guys, if you haven't already done so, go to our website, go to philly.com and find Bob Ford's column about this, my colleague at the Inquirer. He really had what I thought was a smart, excellent take on this and was right kind of along the lines of what I was thinking, which is, you know, in a way, you can, whether you want to assign blame to Johnson or not, whether he did this intentionally and just galactically stupid or galactically desperate, or whether he did this by mistake, really doesn't matter. If the stuff is in his blood, you know, the test is going to come back and show that, and bam, he's going to get 10 games. So take the performance-enhancing drug element out of it and just think of it as if he's suffered an injury and you know he's not going to be back until week 11 or week 12. You know, in that scenario, the Eagles are in really bad shape. I mean, you know, Jason Peters hasn't been practicing lately, and yeah, they insist that he'll be back before the season begins. But as Bob wrote, one injury often begets other injuries. You know, they haven't done a whole lot in the offseason aside from Stefan Wisniewski to really add depth to their offensive line. You're still looking at, you know, guys like Dennis Kelly and Andrew Gardner and Alan Barbary. You know, Brandon Brooks has been limited in practice. He was their big offseason acquisition. You know, what are they going to do here? I mean, if I'm Sam Bradford, I'm going to be dropping back with one eye downfield and the other eye looking at the pass rushers coming after me. So, you know, this is not a good situation. You know, no matter how you frame this, whether, you know, Johnson is totally to blame or not, you know, it's not good for the Eagles at all.
Yeah, we're going to see what develops with this in the next few days. Meanwhile, we're going to start the preseason with the Eagles tomorrow night against Tampa Bay. Last year, we kind of got fooled by some very impressive performances by the Birds in preseason. What should we be watching for this time around in preseason action?
Well, apart from making sure they all, you know, their most important players emerge unscathed, I think you want to see, certainly Thursday night, you want to see Carson Wentz. You want to see how he handles this sort of situation. I mean, there's an awful lot of anticipation around him making this debut, even if it's just in a preseason game. And I think there's even more pressure for him tomorrow because of kind of the way the Eagles have set this up, which is this pretense of Wentz sitting the entire season, which I, from the jump, have never believed was going to happen. You just don't invest that much to go get a prospective franchise quarterback and then sit him the entire first year. You know, I don't care who you have a quarterback playing in front of them. And they have Sam Bradford, who is both, you know, injury riddled and, you know, his history is that of a mediocre quarterback. So, you know, I want to see how Wentz handles this because there's going to be 30, 40,000 people, maybe more, who are going to be there just to see him play. And they have set him up, you know, he's going to lead the team out at halftime. Doug Peterson made a point the other day of saying he wanted to see Wentz do that, a not so subtle hint that, you know, this guy is the franchise quarterback and he's going to be playing before too long. And, you know, all that stuff we said about Sam Bradford, you know, hey, if he's great and it works out, we'll keep him around, baloney. You know, that's not happening. So, you know, I always like to see the quarterbacks. I kind of want to see my favorite thing in training camp every single year is to see if any undrafted, no-name wide receivers emerge. Because I think it's a position that can be – that circumstances matter more than just about any other. You know, you can get open in college and have a lousy quarterback who can't get you the ball, or you play in a system that doesn't lend itself to throwing the ball to the outside very much. They have a kid in Paul Turner out of Louisiana Tech who's been pretty impressive in camp. He gets open. He catches the ball, which is a nice change from some of the other receivers they have. And I want to see if that translates out in the real thing, you know, in the NFL preseason.
Well, Mike, I was going to ask you on the defensive side of the ball, you know, they put out that depth chart yesterday, I guess, and understanding that the first snap hasn't been played yet. But I thought it was interesting that Nolan Carroll and Brandon Graham are shown as reserves, and Eric Rowe all the way down with the third unit. And obviously it's early, but are these guys not showing well at this point?
I don't know if it's – well, Rowe isn't. I mean, Rowe has really struggled. But, you know, by the same token, it's early yet. You know, I think it's a little early for him to get buried. And you always need defensive backs. You know, as far as Graham goes, you know, Vinnie Curry has been pretty impressive in this camp, and he should be because they paid him an awful lot of money to a guy who had been basically nothing more than a situational pass rusher the last couple of years. And so he needed to be good, and he came in a little bit, you know, in bigger, better shape, you know, excuse me, a little bit lighter, I should say, and he looked really good off the ball in camp. So in that regard, I'm not sure we should be too surprised about Graham. I think, you know, he might fall more into that sort of situational pass rusher sort of role. I think they're a little bit higher on Curry than they were on Graham, at least the Howie Roseman, Jim Schwartz sort of, you know, combo there, I guess. You know, so we'll see. I mean, look, this whole thing is fluid. I mean, you know, we like to play lip service, guys, to the idea that this is the NFL and anything can happen. You have all this parity year after year after year. But I got to be honest. I look at this Eagles roster, and I say to myself, what makes anybody think that they're going to contend for a division championship this year? You have a rookie head coach. You have an oft-injured quarterback who I think is pretty tough and maybe a little bit better than people give him credit for, but who doesn't have a lot of weapons around him. You've got a very unstable situation in the offensive line. The defensive line looks pretty good, but you've got question marks at linebacker, question marks at cornerback. So, you know, I'm looking around at this and saying to myself, boy, a 6-10, 7-9 season, you know, that should be the expectation. And anything beyond that, you know, people ought to, you know, start talking about Doug Peterson for coach of the year.
I'm with you. All right, Mike, we want to get to your weekend column about the waiting game. It was essentially about the Flyers, but you also noted that all four of the major pro teams in Philly are essentially retooling and fans are waiting patiently or maybe not so patiently sometimes to see results. Is that pretty much the case right now?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting kind of moment in time in the city sports history. You know, I mean, you guys know this as well as anybody, that Philadelphia is historically not a patient city when it comes to its sports teams. And we have plenty of examples of that atmosphere kind of informing the decisions that the franchises make. I mean, let's be honest. Ed Snyder, for 40 years, more than 40 years, after the Flyers last won the Stanley Cup, did everything he could year after year after year to try to win another Stanley Cup, and never really took the sort of step backward and went into kind of a rebuilding mode that Ron Hextall is trying to do this time around. You know, we saw the same thing with the Sixers. Instead of taking a step back that they did under Sam Hinkie, they sign Elton Brand and trade for, you know, Andrew Bynum and, you know, try to find somebody to play alongside Allen Iverson. And it's this constant kind of let's go for it, go for it. Same thing with the Phillies, keeping Utley, Howard, Rollins, you know, those guys all around to try to make one more run at it instead of breaking the thing down. So, you know, you have that history, and then you have where the franchises are now, and everybody kind of waiting for the arrival of some promising young players, Carson Wentz, Ben Simmons, the number of prospects that the Phillies have, J.P. Crawford and Nick Williams and now Jake Thompson, who's, you know, at least for the moment in the starting rotation. And the Flyers have a number of interesting prospects and guys who, you know, may or may not be on the roster this year, defenseman Ivan Provorov and a forward named Travis Konecny. So, you know, it's interesting to me at this in this city at this time that all four of these teams are kind of going this route. And I would argue that the Eagles are probably hedging their bets more than the other three teams are. They're trying to kind of have their cake and eat it too. If I'd been them, you know, you either keep Sam Bradford or you don't sign Chase Daniel, or you tell Sam Bradford goodbye and trade him or let him walk and then go sign Chase Daniel if you're going to go move up and draft Carson Wentz. What they're trying to do by keeping Bradford around and, you know, hoping that they can, you know, squeak out a division title or a playoff berth with this year with him and then cut him loose at the end of the year or trade him and then move on to Wentz seems to me kind of hubristic. I think it's a it's not a good situation. I think the guys, those three guys have been handling it as well as possible, but I don't think it's going to work out. And I think, you know, they would have been better off, you know, just kind of admitting that they were, you know, clearing the slate and kind of starting fresh.
Well, Mike, in your article on Sunday, I thought it was excellent, by the way. Ron Hextall made the quote is, "I'm not one who believes that players stagnate in their development." And I personally believe that as well, having coached for a long time. You know, I had a conversation with someone just today again that said, you know, there's no room, talking about the Phillies, there's no room for these guys to stay at AA. But there's no room to move them to AAA because they're logjammed because they can't bring guys to the big leagues, and that it's hurting these guys. What's your take on that?
Well, my take is that things happen. And what is perceived to be a logjam at times often clears its own way. I think it's good to have some humility when it comes to things like this. I mean, look, they just had Aaron Nola, the Phillies, for instance, just had Aaron Nola go on the disabled list. And they just had Zach Eflin go on the disabled list. Now, those are two of those guys who, when everybody talked about the logjam, they were two of the big logs. Well, now there's an opening, number one. So let's see what Jake Thompson does. And then there's also the consideration of, hey, you know, Jeremy Hellickson has pitched pretty darn well this year. And they're still in a situation where they need guys to eat innings who could just go out there and pitch reasonably well enough that you're not diving and tapping into the minor leagues, you know, as they did last year and the year before to get, you know, guys like Chad Billingsley and who knows how many no-name guys who really had no future in Major League Baseball at all that they were running out there just to try to, you know, for a spot start here and there. You know, with respect to the Flyers, I think the same sort of thing. I think if they go into camp and Ivan Provorov is one among their best defensemen, you got to keep him up. I mean, I understand what Ron Hextall is saying about, you know, that you're not going to stunt his development by having him go down a junior one more year and dominate. But my question is that born more out of Hextall's consideration of, you know, what's best for the Flyers, or is it out of this kind of ethic that he has of, hey, there's a lot to be gained by a kid riding the rickety old bus and waiting his turn and that all kind of thing, because I'm not sure how much validity that has in this situation. If Provorov is that good, And Konechny can be a second line forward for you guys. Let's see what they've got. You know, I mean, they wouldn't be the first 19 or 20 year old kids to come up and play in the NHL. And if you've got a good locker room, and they say that they have, which, and I believe them that they have a good locker room, then those guys are going to know that, you know, we've got better kids down on the farm, and they're not up here. And once those kids get up there, then presumably guys like Giroux and Voracek and Simmons and, you know, the other veterans in that room will keep them on the straight and narrow. I don't think character in that room is an issue. And I would have less of an issue with, you know, those sorts of young players coming in and thriving in that sort of situation.
Yeah, they wouldn't have brought Gostisbehere up last year if it weren't for the injury. And look what happened. They brought
exactly.
him up. He was great. So I want to see Konechny and Provorov as soon as possible. Now, we talked a lot over the last couple of years about Sam Hinkie and the process. Sam is gone now, but admire his approach or not, is this the year we're finally going to see whether the tanking was worth it? What are your initial impressions of Ben Simmons, and should we expect Joel Embiid to actually stay healthy and be a contributor right away?
Well, I think with respect to the process, Chet, I think, you know, this is kind of one of the misnomers about Hinkie, which was that there was this presumption that he was always going to just keep kicking the can down the road. And if you looked at the way their offseason set up, that the tanking was going to have to stop this coming season no matter what. They ended up with three first-round draft picks. They might have had that. There was a chance they could have had four, but they did get the number one overall pick. You had Embiid presumably healthy. You had Dario Saric presumably, and as it turned out, successfully, coming over from Turkey. He's going to play, you know, for them next season. So the tanking was always going to end. The idea that you were just going to keep losing games and running through, you know, pin the tail on the point guard sort of thing, you know, was going to stop. And just by adding those players, as young as they are, they were going to be better than a 10-win team. So there was going to be some improvement one way or another. I think Hinkie could have done to this point what Brian Colangelo has done, which is to say to go out and sign some legitimate NBA players, guys like Gerald Henderson, you know, and Jared Bayless, you know, good, solid, serviceable NBA guys who they got for reasonable money. Maybe go out and make a signing like they did with, you know, Sergio Rodriguez, you know, fairly impressive in the Olympics, if you guys have been watching. You know, he's a very good passer, very heady player. I talked with Brett Brown the other day a little bit about him. Brown really likes him. So is this the year that turns everything around? I don't think so. But I do think it's a step forward. I mean, this is still a really, really young team. They've got a lot of growth to make. You know, Simmons has been very impressive. Was very impressive in the summer league, but he's got to be a better shooter and he's got to be a more willing shooter. I saw him hesitating too often to take jump shots, and teams are going to lag off him and, you know, force him to make a perfect pass or force him to take a 15 to 25 foot jump shot until he starts making them and things open up. As far as Embiid goes, every time I see him in practice, in the gym, he looks incredible. I mean, he's at least 7'1", if not 7'2". He's grown since the Sixers have drafted him. His body is a gigantic V. He's nimble on the court, and these one-on-one workouts, everything. You would look at this guy and go, oh, my God, you know, I want to see him on the court. I want to see him on the court in a 5-on-5 situation. Well, that's just it. We haven't seen that yet. And we haven't – there's no evidence yet that his foot is going to withstand the pounding of – you know, even 20 minutes a night over an 82-game season. I'm going to be really curious to see how Brett handles Embiid's playing time because you still have Jahlil Okafor in the roster. You still have Nerlens Noel. You got to get those guys minutes too.
Yep, got to be interesting to see what happens with all four of these teams over the next couple of years. Now, switching gears, Mike, you told us last year that one of your sports writing heroes was the great Bill Lyon, who actually mentored you. How great was his five-part series about his Alzheimer's, and how cool was it to be there with him last week when he threw out the first pitch at a Phillies game?
Gosh, just incredible. You know, I mean, the series, I would think the Inquirer is going to nominate it for the Pulitzer Prize. And you know, I'm biased completely, but if the judges have any good sense, they'll judge it accordingly. You know, and to be there, you know, last week, last Wednesday, it was a week ago tonight, to see him throughout that first pitch. And, you know, he's such a good man. You know, it was funny. I was in the press box. I'd gone down and seen him with a couple other writers beforehand and went back up to the press box to watch it. And I was standing next to a couple guys, Jason Stark, who worked with Bill for a long time at the Inquirer, and Jerry Krasnick, both of whom are baseball writers at ESPN now. And mm-hmm. Jerry didn't know Bill all that well. And I could overhear Jason talking to Jerry about him. And the one thing that stands out, which was 100% true, is that Jason said to Jerry, you know, you hear all the time, oh, this guy's a good guy, he's a better person than he is a writer. And Jason said, with Bill, all of that is absolutely true. He was the genuine article. Like, nobody lived it and worked it better than he did. And it's the truth, you know, it's the absolute truth. And, you know, it's been great for me as somebody who, you know, has known him 20 years and who grew up admiring him and has gotten close to him, to see the outpouring from the Delaware Valley and the readers of the Inquirer and Philly.com to that series and to him, because it just reaffirms that the power that, you know, the written word can have, the power a person of grace and dignity can have, and it's been a wonderful kind of coda to his life.
Yep.
Fantastic. Well, Mike, we're used up almost all our time already, but we have one little segment we like to do called Fast Five, where basically Chet asks five pretty simple questions and you give five pretty simple answers. You up for that?
Bring it.
All right, Mike Sielski, we've talked about the waiting game, Philadelphia sports teams. Which of the four Philly pro teams has the best shot at winning the championship in the next 3 to 5 years?
For Flyers.
Okay, I'll buy that. Number two,
yeah.
We've talked a lot about
NHL playoffs are so, NHL playoffs are so random that if they get in, they could make a run.
I hear you. We've talked a lot about the young prospects on all the Philly teams. Which potential star or stars are you most excited about watching develop?
Joel Embiid. I want to see him stay healthy. I think he could be incredible if he does.
All right. Alex Rodriguez, he has 696 home runs, but also a couple of instances of taking performance-enhancing drugs, is retiring this week. Would you vote for him for the Hall of Fame?
That's a really good question. I probably would.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I hear you. The numbers are certainly there, even without the performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah,
I think he would have had an amazing career.
I have major ambivalence over the steroid performance-enhancing thing. I go back and forth about it all the time. But gun to my head, I would say, yes, I vote for him for the Hall of Fame.
All right. You probably heard something about this, Mike. The Olympics are going on right now down in Rio. What is your favorite Olympic event?
I've loved the swimming the past few days, watching Michael Phelps and Katie Ledecky. But I have to admit, I have a five-year-old son, and he is so into water polo that I have gotten into watching water polo with him. And just because of his excitement, I've gotten excited about it too.
Wow. And finally, Mike, you do a weekly podcast with David Murphy. I've actually listened to a few of them. What's it called, and where can people find it?
Oh, you're the one. It's called Not Another Philly Sports Talk Show. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Philly.com on the sports site. There's a little photo of Murph and me right by the link. So if any of your listeners want to tune in, we would appreciate it.
All right. That's Fast Five. Awesome job, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
All right, Mike. We appreciate you joining us, and hopefully we can do it again.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks. All right, Chad, interesting stuff. Let's get over to our trivia question. We're pretty much right on time, so let's get that out there. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. And as was mentioned, we'll be giving away a signed 8x10 color photo, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles of the Flyers, Sean Podine, and Dave Pullen, to the first person that can call and correctly answer this trivia question. And Chet, I sent this to you and you told me that this was the easiest trivia question that I've ever put out. Is that true?
By far.
Well, I'm going to hope somebody has to actually think about this because maybe it's lost in the woodwork. Okay, so here we go. There's been a lot of talk about the 2016 Eagles defense and new coordinator Jim Schwartz, but not much talk about the offense. Who's the team's new offensive coordinator? How's that one?
Been a lot Easy, of
talk
that's
about
how it is.
2016 Eagles defense and new coordinator Jim Schwartz, but not much talk about the offense. Who's the team's new offensive coordinator?
Talk about a softball.
All right. That's a softball, okay. All right, let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network at the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.ShopForKisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Well, Chet, that brings us to our first Philly Press Box Radio Hall of Fame broadcaster's ballot. This is something, you know, I sprung on you a few weeks ago, said we wanted to add something new, but we kept putting it off because we had some other things going on. So you and I got together and we came up with four finalists, and there could be another four or six or more added to this list, but we came up with four finalists in alphabetical order: Bill Campbell, Gene Hart, Harry Callis, and Merrill Reese.
Now, those are four legends right there, Bill, and certainly all worthy of enshrinement, but we're only going to induct one this year to start off, and it'll be very interesting to see who wins the fan vote. All incredibly talented, all extremely popular with fans.
Yep. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through these like we did and just give a little thumbnail breakdown on each of the four men, And I'm going to start off, but do we have a caller for a trivia question?
Yeah, we actually have two people waiting to talk to us, so we'll take them in order. Let's go first to whoever this is from, I think this is from your area, the 863 area code. Who do we have?
Hey, guys, how y'all doing?
Good, thanks.
How are you? Real good. Hey, it's Adam.
It's Adam.
Hey,
Adam.
Adam, what's going on?
Another day.
I hear you. You got a trivia question for this softball I tossed out there?
Yeah, I sure hope so. Frank Reich.
Frank Reich it is. Frank Reich
from
it is.
From San Diego, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep.
Beautiful.
Easy one, I told you, Bill.
All right.
Yeah, Bill, that was a little too easy, buddy. I didn't have to think about it more than 5 seconds, buddy.
Well, you know, some people just are all caught up in the defense. I thought maybe I'd sneak one in there and make sure somebody was actually doing their homework.
Absolutely. But we do got Brian Dawkins back, speaking of defense, so that's a good sign.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, Adam, I think I still have your address from when you won just a couple weeks ago, and we will get this out to you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for the show. Love it. Love Philly Sports Talk.
All right, buddy.
Take care, Adam.
Y'all have a good one.
All right. Well, Chad, hey, I'm going to start off the breakdown with a man who has worked for the 76ers, the Eagles, and the Phillies along the way, Bill Campbell. Bill Campbell was a broadcaster, as mentioned, for Philadelphia Warriors, the 76ers, the Phillies, the Eagles. Among his most famous broadcasts, the Eagles NFL championship win over Green Bay in 1960, and Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game for the Warriors, still an NBA record in 1962. I believe we have a clip of that.
The rebound, Luckenbill. Back to Chamberlain. He shoots up. No good. In and out. The rebound, Luckenbill. Back to Luckwick. Into Chamberlain. The Warrior players are all over.
54 years later, it's still the most offensive game. And notice the Dipper dunk in there. That recording is now in the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. Bill was also the winner of the 2005 Kirk Dowdy Award for induction into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Upon Bill's passing, another one of our members on the ballot this year, Merle Reese, offered the following. He was the greatest in the history of Philadelphia broadcasting. He did every sport in Philadelphia, the Warriors and the Sixers in basketball, the Phillies, the Eagles, of course, college basketball, the Penn Relays, hosted talk shows, and he was great. The Dean. He was named the National Sports Broadcaster, three-time winner of the Broadcaster of the Year Award. He was also inducted to several local halls of fame. Bill Campbell also was a broadcaster for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Penn State football, and Big Five basketball games. Not a bad way to lead off, Chet, but you've got the next man up. The voice of the Flyers, Gene Hart.
Yeah, and by the way, I met Bill Campbell 5 years ago, and a real gentleman and a legend for sure. Now, Gene Hart, well, he was born in New York City, but Gene Hart will be forever remembered as one of Philadelphia's legendary broadcasters. He graduated from Pleasantville High in South Jersey and then Trenton State College. He did some play-by-play of high school hockey and other sports in his 20s and early 30s, but really didn't have all that much experience when he auditioned for a broadcast job with the brand-new expansion Flyers just about 50 years ago. He got the job, working initially in 1967 as color analyst with play-by-play voice Stu Nahan. He ended up taking over play-by-play and staying behind the mic, going from TV to radio back to TV for 29 years through the end of the 1994-95 season. As you remember, Gene had a rapid-fire delivery, and he had that memorable voice that would often go up in pitch as he described the action on the rink below. He announced more than 2,000 NHL games, 6 separate Stanley Cup finals, and 5 NHL All-Star games. Of course, one of his most memorable calls came at the end of Game 6 of the 1974 Cup Finals, May 19th of that year.
13 seconds left in the game. 10 seconds. Morris shoots it down the ice. Clark makes the save. Ladies and gentlemen, the Flyers are going to win the Stanley Cup. The Flyers win the Stanley Cup. The Flyers win the Stanley Cup. The Flyers have won the Stanley Cup.
Maybe the most perfect call in championship game ever. As most people know, Gene Hart's signature phrase, which he used at the end of games, was "good night and good hockey." In the late 1980s, the Flyers moved Hart from TV to radio in favor of another pretty great announcer, Mike Emmerich, but a few years later, fans pretty much demanded that Hart be returned to the television booth, and that happened in 1992 for his final 3 seasons. A legend for sure, Gene Hart. And that brings us to our third finalist now, Bill, the late, great Harry Callis.
Yep, I'm up with a longtime voice of HK, and Harry Callis made his major league debut in 1965 with the Houston Astros, where he called the first game at Houston's Astrodome. He was hired by the Phillies in 1971 and was the master of ceremonies at the opening of Veterans Stadium. During that time, Harry became known around the country, but he joined NF Films as a narrator in 1975 and became the primary voice following the passing of the legendary John Facenda in 1984. He provided the narration to the highlights of Inside the NFL from its inception in 1976 through the 2008 season. Nicknamed Harry the K by Phillies pitcher Larry Christensen in the mid-70s, a nickname quickly adopted by Phillies fans. Callis received the Ford C. Frick Award from the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 2002, and in 2004 he was named Person of the Year by the Broadcast Pioneers of Philadelphia. That year, he was also inducted to the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame as a member of the charter class. He was named Pennsylvania Sportscaster of the Year 18 times. Harry also helped announce the ceremonial closing of Veterans Stadium in 2003 and was the master of ceremonies at the opening of Citizens Bank Park in 2004. Mike Schmidt said, "I know I can speak for the Phillies when I say Harry Callis is loved by everyone. All of us can relate to our daily confrontations with his smile, his charm, and his warmth. He spread his passion for people and baseball all over the country for almost 50 years. His voice will resonate in my mind the rest of my life. I will never be called Michael Jack again without seeing his smile. Following Harry's death, and playing a video of him singing the first verse of High Hopes at Citizens Bank Park after every Phillies win. Following is a brief collage of Harry's calls. Play it, Chen.
The 3-0 pitch.
Swing a long drive! There it is! Number 500! The career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith! And the Phillies have regained the lead at Pittsburgh 8-6. And the Phillies dugout comes swarming out to home plate.
Right on the heels of J-Roll, there goes Chase, and this is chopped to McBride, who
throws it. Chase is going to keep going, and he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
The lid stretches. The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. Brad Lynch does it again and stays perfect for the 2008 season. 48 for 48.
Well, Chet, you have the honors of finishing up with the voice of the Eagles, Merle Reese. You got a lot of work to do to top these three.
Yeah, I still have goosebumps from listening to Harry. Okay, one of the legends among Philly sportscasters, the only one of the four that we're talking about who's still with us, is the great Merrill Reese. Soon to be 74 years old, Merrill, a Temple alum, has been a part of the Philadelphia radio scene since the 1960s and the voice of the Philadelphia Eagles since 1977. Yes, he's about to begin his 40th season as the Birds' play-by-play voice, and what a voice it is.
Under 30 seconds left of the game. From here on in, Pizarcik can just fall on the football and there is nothing the Eagles can do. And Pizarcik fumbles the football. It's picked up by Herman Edwards. 15, 10, 5, touchdown Eagles. I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Here we go, fourth down. They give it to Smith and they stop him again. They stop him again. The Eagles, for the first time in 24 years, are headed to the Super Bowl.
Cobb takes the snap. He's back. He fires. Completes to John Jackson. Breaks away. 45-40. 35-30. He's going to go. Deshaun Jackson cartwheels into the end zone. 64-yard touchdown.
He is sick.
The kick is up.
What a moment.
It's gone. And the Eagles win.
Wow. Merrill's made so many great calls. Those are just a few of them. And I'll tell you, even a few weeks shy of his 74th birthday, his memory is amazing. He remembers dates of games from 10 or 20 years ago, specific plays, how he called those plays. He is the longest-serving current play-by-play announcer in the NFL, often imitated but never duplicated. That is the great Merrill Reese.
Well, Chad, I can say we have a fantastic four to choose from. We'll have our ballot available tonight to begin the voting. We'll run it until next Wednesday. We'll announce it next Wednesday night. But you only get to vote for one of the four on this ballot, and it's certainly going to be tough because we just put out four Philadelphia sports legends.
And let me tell you, that was so much fun throwing those little audio bits together because I just love hearing those guys. No doubt about it, Bill. I cannot wait to see how the listener vote turns out next week.
Yeah, me neither. And you know, the thing about it is, you know, we tried to give a brief thumbnail of these guys with a short audio clip, but you could talk about these guys for, you know, an hour each of all the different accomplishments, you know, that each has called over the years.
Yeah, that's for sure. Not a whole lot of audio of Bill Campbell still out there, unfortunately, but he was so good back in the 1960s. As you said, he did it all the different sports except hockey, and you know, he was a master at every single one of them.
Absolutely. And all by all accounts, all absolutely great men as well. Very well thought of in their industry as being real good people.
Yep, that's for sure.
All right. Like I said, I saw your short review of Tommy and Me the other day, and I talked to Carl Henderson the other day, or today, actually, and he got to see the show. He actually sent me a message the minute he walked out of the show about just how fantastic it was, and tell us about it.
Yeah, Carl was there on Sunday afternoon, I believe. I saw it Friday night. Neither of us were there on Saturday, and that's when Tommy McDonald himself was there, the afternoon matinee show. So that would have been really a trip to see Tommy himself there. But, all right, I think most people know the premise. The play chronicles Ray Dinger's relationship with boyhood hero Tommy McDonald and the effort by Ray in the mid and late 90s to convince voters to elect the great former wide receiver to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, a campaign that, as everyone is aware now, it did pay off in 1998, and Tommy insisted that Ray Dinger have the honor of inducting him. Even though most everyone in the sold-out audience knew the story, it was still incredibly entertaining. There was way more humor than I had expected there to be, and some terrific performances from all four of the actors involved. They had people playing, you know, young and old versions of Ray and Tommy. Enhancing the production, some great game footage courtesy NFL Films. So, yeah, it was really, really well done. I laughed a lot. I fought back tears in a couple of spots. And I shared my review, by the way, with Ray the other day, and he was very appreciative of my positive take on it. And he reiterated just what an incredible experience this whole thing has been for him. It's something new for him writing a play, but, you know, clearly Ray is just amazing. His first crack at theater was a rousing success. There are still another six performances to go through this weekend, and not surprisingly, they are all sold out. So way to go, Ray Dinger. And if you're lucky enough to be going to see Tommy and Me this weekend, you will enjoy it, I promise you.
Well, Chet, didn't they have was there only a total of four actors in this, or was like six? I mean, it was a very small cast, wasn't it?
It was just the four. It was the young version of Ray and the you know, the current or more recent version of Ray. And then there was Tommy as an Eagles player, and he was in Eagles green the whole time as the young Tommy, plus an older version of Tommy, you know, the one who in the 1990s and beyond was talking to Ray as a friend. So that was it, four characters, and then there was, you know, some film footage beyond that. But that was it, and there were some times when, you know, the old Ray or the, you know, the current day Ray was being talked to by the younger 10- or 11-year-old version of Ray, kind of as his conscience. So that was really neat, and it was just well done, and all the actors were so good. I'm sure there was not one person in the audience who didn't enjoy it. And you didn't have to be a sports fan either, because it was just a great story. It wasn't a football story. It was, you know, about a relationship and how much Tommy meant to Ray and how important it was to have Ray see Tommy inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Very neat. Now, you had a chance to talk with Ray, I guess, or you've emailed with him or whatever. Did is there a plan to take this any further, or is that something that somebody has to pick up and, you know, basically sign a contract to do? You haven't.
Yeah,
there's
not a plan. There's not a plan as yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. I mean, you know, people are joking about that with Ray. You know, when's it going to get to Broadway? Who's going to play you when it hits the big screen? As we talked to Ray on our show 2 weeks ago. So I would not be surprised to see something happen beyond these 12 performances. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Hey, by the way, now I was at the play last Friday, and Carl was there Sunday. Then I was checking out some music in Philly on Sunday. And while all that was going on, you were in Atlantic City. What was going on down there?
Well, I went to the National Sports Memorabilia Show. It was Wednesday through Sunday. It was really cool. I don't know if you've ever been in that convention center. I don't know how big that building is under roof, but it seemed like a half a mile from one end of the room to the other. There were so many people. You know, it wasn't jam-packed because it was so big, but there was plenty of room. There was like 70 Hall of Famers from different sports that were there. Joe Namath, obviously, was a big one that was very popular, but so was Barry Sanders was there. And then, of course, we went over all the local guys that were there, and they were very popular as well. Dick Allen, Mike Schmidt, Steve Carlton, and P. Rose was big as well. But then there were guys there, Brian Leach from the Rangers, Eddie Jockman, Bernie Williams was big, you know, with the New York crowd. So a real good crowd. But I'll tell you this, Chet, you know, if you have any baseball or football cards or anything like that, basketball cards up in the closet, you might want to dig them out, because there was serious buying and selling going on for vintage, good condition cards. A lot of money you know, numbers with commas in them being passed around, buying and selling old cards.
Yeah, I do have a few from the 1960s, but, you know, I was a dumb little kid when I was 10 or 11, so I had a couple of pretty great cards, and I wrote on them with a pen. That was not very smart.
Well, you know, we used to put them up against the step and throw other cards at them so whoever got it could take them all, because it was about who
yeah,
could have
right.
more, not which ones you had. But I will say Mickey Mantle is still the leader in the clubhouse. Mickey Mantle stuff, Ted Williams, Sandy Koufax, those guys are still bringing big money many, many years later.
Yeah, I think I still have a Mickey Mantle card from the early 60s anyway, not a rookie card or anything, but I do have some of the old-time cards, so they are fun to look at. I'm going to have to dig those out again.
Yeah, I can tell you, a good condition early 60s Mickey Mantle card will bring you some money, my friend.
Nice. Hey, I didn't see any pictures of you in sports celebs yet. What's the deal?
Well, to be honest with you, I was working.
Poor excuse.
I did not get to get a whole lot of pictures. I got a couple things signed by different guys, but I was not able to get too many pictures. I did get Donovan McNabb, by the way, on my big Eagles helmet, so that was great. And I did get Cal Ripken on a jersey for one of my boys, which that was great as well. So
nice.
Jerry Nalen took care of all the photos, though. He got his way around and got to meet Jerry for the first time, which was great. And he took care of the photo ops for me.
Ah, okay. I'll have to check with Jerry to see if he's got some good pictures. You know, I love the pictures.
Actually, he has a fantastic picture that he posted. Maybe you just didn't see it of him and Mike Schmidt. Really, really cool.
Oh,
job.
No, I didn't see that yet. That's awesome.
Yeah, check it out. It's good stuff. Well, hey, Chet, I wanted to some sad news today in the world of sports and in the broadcasting business. Mr. John Saunders passed away suddenly today at, I believe, the age of 57, 58?
61.
61, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, sad news. John, I always liked John.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, not funny, but we do this little parting shots segment on our program, but we're not the only ones who do that. They do it real well every Sunday morning on the Sports Reporters on ESPN. And John was the host of the Sports Reporters the last 5 years. In fact, he's a 30-year veteran of ESPN. John Saunders was a guy who did it all. He anchored SportsCenter and various other shows on the network, and he did play-by-play for pretty much every sport imaginable. In addition, he was a co-founder and board member of the Jimmy V Foundation for Cancer Research. And by all accounts, he's one of those guys who was just, you know, nice, friendly, terrific to work with, terrific to meet and talk to. So really sad to see the news that we lost John Saunders at age 61. I'll tell you, my Sunday mornings with the Sports Reporters, which I DVR every week, won't be the same anymore.
Yep. Good man and good hockey man, too. That's why I always like to hear him talking to his stuff.
Yeah, he's from Canada, and he played college hockey and some junior hockey. So, yeah, he loved to talk about the pucks.
Yep. All right, and hey, we've also been having a bunch of birthdays with our good friends here in July and August. So let's wish a happy birthday to our good buddy Big John Roberts' birthday was yesterday.
Yes, sir. Happy birthday, Big John, and thank you for your continued support of Philly Press Box Radio.
You bet. All right, and Tim, let's get to our signings updated. Carl's Cards and Collectibles. As you can tell, football season has arrived. Carl has added new Eagles defensive back Rodney McLeod to the list of signers. Rodney will be in the store Saturday, September the 24th. And I know Carl's still working on some baseball closeout things. He's going to try to sneak a couple more guys in there. And, of course, he'll be having Eagles as he can throughout the season. So stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road, Havertown, PA, or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. You can also visit his website, carlscards.com, or contact Carl on Twitter at Carl's Cards. And by the way, Chet, I would tell you, I was at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown just today.
Visiting Carl and checking out the merchandise, huh?
Well, I was visiting Carl and picking up a framed jersey that I had framed for a friend. And I'll tell you, you know, he posts on Friday framings, and I'll tell you what, he's got a great thing going there, great frames. It's a great part of his business. And if you have anything, it doesn't even have to be sports related, but if you have something that you really want framed first class, Carl's got it going on. And what I happened to get for someone was a signed Ray Lewis jersey framed, and it looks fantastic.
And thanks much to Carl for continually giving us some terrific giveaway items each week. It's just a shame that the hosts aren't eligible to win them.
That's right. That's right. All right, Ted. I want to throw one more topic at you before we get to our parting shots. The Eagles open up tomorrow night. We talked briefly about that with Mike. You going to any of these games? And what's your prognosis as things get going? What do you want to see? Is it just all about Carson Wentz?
I'm certainly not going to a preseason game. No interest in that, but I will be watching. Yeah, I want to see Carson Wentz for sure play the second half. I know it's going to be against the second and third teamers, but I just want to see, you know, how he looks throwing the ball. We've heard that he's been up and down, overthrowing some receivers. I guess he's a little too juiced up, excited maybe. So I want to see how he does in game action. I want to see how the O-line works. I mean, as far as we know, Lane Johnson will be playing tomorrow night. Because even if he's going to be suspended, it hasn't happened yet. So probably Lane Johnson will start. I want to see how the other guys do just in case he does get suspended. So I want to see what kind of depth we have on the O-line. We've heard about, you know, the wide receivers and the linebackers and the lack of depth there. So let's see what they have to offer. I know it's preseason. It's the first preseason game. But it's always fun to see, you know, how these young guys especially look and whether there are some guys who maybe have a shot at making the team, as Mike Sielski said.
You know, one thing I want to see, and you already know my opinion on preseason football, so we won't get into that.
Yep.
But the one thing that I do want to see is I want to see guys consistently catching the football.
That would be nice.
You know, we had way too many drops, and we got to have guys catch football. Whoever the top five or six or whoever's going to make this team, you know, they got to be able to catch the ball, and that's what I'm looking for improvement there.
And there'll be guys getting opportunities because, as you know, Jordan Matthews is out for at least 2 weeks, maybe the entire preseason. So all the other guys have to get in there and step up. I want to see Nelson Aguilar make some catches because he's got to have a better year than last year when, as a rookie, he had, what, 23 catches? He's got to be over 50 at least this year. Want to see how Reuben Randall does, the newcomer from the Giants. A lot of guys are going to have opportunities to show themselves off, so – you know, I'm not going to care whether we win the game or not, but I do want to see guys make plays and, as you said, hold on to the ball.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll get into this on another show here before, you know, as the season goes along. But a lot of good things being said about the new receivers coach, Greg Lewis, you know, who's a former player
yeah.
here, that the guys are really liking Greg. And, you know, if you like your boss, sometimes you play better. So, you know, let's see how that plays out.
Yeah, it's always good to have a coach that you like. It makes you want to do your job a little bit better, I think. So hopefully they'll surprise us and have a little better year than everybody's expecting. Because right now, especially with the Lane Johnson news, a lot of people are getting more and more pessimistic about this season. So who knows, maybe we'll be surprised.
Yeah, and you know, one other comment on the Jason Peters deal, you know, with him being a little banged up. You know, these veterans don't want to go through camp. You know, he'll be ready. He'll be ready, unless he's really hurt. These guys, you know, they don't want to go to camp. They've done 15 of these. They don't need to do another one. So I expect to see Jason Peters back, and but the Lane Johnson situation definitely is troubling.
Yeah, even though you said that about Jason Peters, I'm going to put the over-under at about 9.5 on how many games Jason Peters will start this year, because I'm pretty sure he's not going to make it through an entire season playing every game.
Okay. But we'll get to that a little more as the season goes on. How's that?
Yeah, we'll do a little over-under with a couple of things.
There you go. All right, how about a parting shot for you this week, Mr. Chesko? I know you have one.
Yep. Hard to believe, but Jake Thompson last weekend became the 2,000th player to participate in a game for the Phillies since the franchise started play back in 1883. We know about all the big names, Chuck Klein, Robin Roberts, Richie Ashburn, Mike Schmidt, Steve Carlton, Chase Utley, etc., but As a Phils fan my entire life, I will sometimes, for no apparent reason, think about some of the lesser names. I remember catcher Clay Dalrymple from the mid-60s, in part just because he had a goofy name. Who could forget right fielder Roger Freed, who played two pretty much unforgettable seasons in the early 1970s? I remember him, but a lot of people don't. Every once in a while, the name Luis Aguayo comes into my brain. He was mostly a bench guy, but he somehow managed to play 8 or 9 seasons with the team. I didn't see this guy play, but I remember Willie Puddinhead Jones being mentioned often by Richie Ashburn. What a great nickname, Puddinhead. And, of course, I remember a lot of busts on our Phillies over the years. Lance Parrish, Wendell McGee, Carlton Lower, Eric Valent, Adam Eaton. I could name many more. But let's end with this one, Danny Tartable. Tartable had a great 27-homer, 101 RBI season with the White Sox in 1996 and signed with the Phillies ahead of the 1997 season. How did he do? Well, he played 3 games, went 0-for-7 before a foot injury that ultimately ended his career. He could have rehabbed it, but chose to retire instead. Another in a lengthy list of guys who played for the Phillies and disappointed us. Hopefully, Mr. 2000, Jake Thompson, will have a better fate.
Well, funny that you mentioned Danny Tartable, then you forgot Willie the Philly, too. I always liked him. Willie the Philly.
Oh, I liked Willie. Yeah, Willie was great.
Yep. But it's funny that you mentioned Danny Tartable because he used to be number one on my Philly thief list before
yeah.
he got taken over by that bum from the Sixers that never played one game that I can't even pronounce
Bynum.
His name because it makes me ill. But Danny Tartable is number two to that other guy.
0-for-7 in his career with the Phillies.
There you go. All right. Well, my parting shot, Chad, is it's not often you get to see someone that is the greatest of all time. Well, folks, you are seeing it in one Michael Phelps. Phelps is in his 5th Olympics, tying Derek Taurus for most appearances. It all started in 2000 as a 15-year-old when he became the youngest male to make the U.S. Olympic team in 68 years, gathering a 5th place finish in the 200 butterfly. The rest, as they say, is history. He presently has 21 gold medals in his Olympic career with 3 races to go in Rio. He's won a combined 25 medals. With the 21 gold medals in his bag, he's won more medals alone than 174 countries have. Sit back and enjoy the Michael Phelps ride because you won't see the endurance and talent of an athlete like him to come around in any time soon.
You got that right. I've actually watched some of the Olympics. I watched 2 Phelps races last night, so very exciting. And, yeah, he's certainly pretty dominant.
Yes, he is. All right.
Hey,
Jeff,
one quick thing.
Go ahead.
One quick thing. We have a guest for next week. I forgot to tell you. We will be joined next week by a guy who's been on with us before, and we will be talking about the 10-year anniversary of the movie Invincible with Mr. Invincible himself, Vince Papale.
Woohoo! All right. Fantastic. Looking forward to that. That'd be great.
Yep.
All right. Let's get our thanks out to Philadelphia Inquirer's Mike Zielski, Carl's Cars and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor, SouthFortistas.org, the online shopping network for the Tistas Patel Foundation. For Jim Chetchko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you will join us on Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, August 17th at 7 p.m. with Invincible. Thanks for Pally. You can listen to our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.